frontline health workers are doing a really great job, and the Ministry of Health is doing a good job. However, I feel that they haven't got 100% control. So we've had several random cases appear at hospitals in the last 2 weeks. They haven't been picked up in testing or through close contact or tracing of close contacts. So two at Waitakere, and I think it's probably about four now at Middlemore. We've had pockets of cases associated with at least three gang communities. And there's also an issue around those that are in transitional housing arrangements. So what I think is happening is that by and large, the ministry and the government have got control of the outbreak, but there is a periphery, mainly in the Māori community, at the lower socioeconomic end, the most impoverished and marginalised end, in a demographic that is also one of the least trusting of anything to do with mainstream, and that there is a small amount of ongoing community transmission there. And I think the numbers say that. Last year, when we went to level three in the first wave, in the first 10 days, so we're 10 days into level three now, there were 25 cases. Every day was under 10 cases, and they had, by this time, already had two zeros. We have 184 cases in 10 days. And the pattern is that the majority of cases now for over 2 weeks have been Māori, and I believe that we'll continue to see Māori cases.
Okay, so our whānau that are presenting, you know, as an example, they're presenting when it's very late, isn't it? So they're going into hospital when they're very ill. Some of them are presenting testing positive while they're at the hospital, like the Middlemore cases, as an example. They have comorbidity and they're presenting, and then they also appear to become positive.
We don't know exactly what conditions they had, and by the look of it, they've basically showed up for other things. So they might have sprained a wrist, or they might have just had a bad headache or something, and they're being tested there. The key thing is they're not being picked up before going to hospital through the tracing of whānau household members or close contacts, and that's the bit that's worrying.
These are our whānau who live in really tight corners of our community, eh? They're the ones that live in the corners, and there's a really sharp bend before you can get to them. Mm. And they, you know, in no judgment, but they prefer to live that way. They prefer to live out of the spotlight.
Yeah. Well, when I was a lot younger, I used to be what they called a... I was a youth worker, and I worked in marginalised communities with what they called at-risk youth in those days, and also with the gang community. Now, the thing is if those people have a chance, they want to lead a different life. But the key thing here is it takes a lot of work over a good period of time to build up their trust. Now, at the moment, we've got probably every whānau order agency, all iwi community service providers, and all our health providers launching into vaccination really hugely. And, you know, there's not the resourcing to make the connection if there is indeed some transmission going on in the periphery of our marginalised demographic group, and that's the ongoing issue. Of course, one of the other issues here is that the Crown has a treaty obligation to protect our community, particularly at the margins. And I think with 184 cases at level three in 10 days, that's seven or eight times higher than last year in the first wave. The decision to go to level three was premature. And I think you may have might remember I wrote a column on the morning they made that decision saying that the result would be a big surge in our community, and that's happened. And if the government goes to level two on Monday, I think there'll be a further surge, and there's also further risk of Delta going beyond the Auckland border.
It does appear from some organisations, I've seen them reach out to their kaimahi to say we return to work, or these will be the working conditions when we move to level two next week, when the announcement is being made. You will not be able to move outside of the Auckland boundary. It will be moving within the boundary. So there appears to be an expectation by some business, some sectors of the business community, that a type of level two will take place, at, albeit that it will be a level two within Auckland boundaries. If that is the case, and not saying that it is, so I'm just saying, if that is the case, that is going to be very, very challenging. This is going to be a problem for us, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And probably one of the reasons we've seen the jump in cases the last couple of days is when you're dealing with transmission on the margin of your city and you've gone to level three, now that's still quite a high level of restriction, but nevertheless, there are many more people moving about. More people can go to work, people can do a wider range of shopping. And so that creates the opportunity for the virus to jump.
And well, we're just in a petri dish, aren't we? You know,
yes,
we're just getting all the fleas to jump around in the same petri dish.
1.6 million of you. And the thing is when you move to level two, there'll be even more people moving about. Now, let's just say you've got someone who's quite transient and maybe sleeps in different parts of the city. I mean, they only have to come in contact with one other person who's mobile via a waka or a car, and they travel around inside Auckland, and then you could see it jumping into different suburbs. And the pattern of concentrated testing that we've seen, you know, so mainly in South Auckland and then Massey and then South Auckland, Mount Wellington and Henderson, it's starting to look like that's the kind of pattern that's emerging. So that will become even more risky next week. And it's probably, it will be really important to maintain the border, but it's probably going to mean even more people are crossing that border. And then that becomes a risk for the wider country. Now, in a scenario where we've already gone prematurely to level three and been there for 2 weeks, it's unlikely the government will want to go back to level four. They could carry on level three for another week. I think that's probably what they should do. Or try to go to a level two plus, which looks like where they're trying to go. But the numbers we're dealing with are too high. And we keep forgetting that we're not only much higher numbers at level three compared to the first wave last year, but Delta is 2.5 times more infectious, and it's very risky. So the early modelling talked about a few hundred cases, and earlier in the late last week maybe, the modelling was saying 1,000 cases. We're at 1,250 now in a very short space of time. And last year, the first wave peaked, ended with 1,508. And if we're not careful, we're going to go past that.
When do we have a time, you know, will you be able to, are you able to gauge when, if we carry on in this manner, well, when will we see that? If we drop down to two or two plus, when will we see that? It would probably be more accelerated speed to that point, would it not?
Well, the key thing here is, the government's talked about it's got control over things. And so what should happen is, one of the things with Delta is if you have a person in, say, a close contact in your household and they've been told to get tested and isolate, and then the rest of the whānau is staying at home as well, a year or so ago, if that person ended up being positive, the rest of the whānau with good protocols could have stayed safe you know, and then your whānau member goes off to MIQ. The thing with Delta is, if they do test positive, it's pretty much certain that all of you are going to end up with it. Now, that's one explanation for the high numbers. However, having said that, if the government has indeed got control of the outbreak, there should be a point where any mention of unlinked cases, people showing up at hospital, cases in the marginal, the margins of our community, that should all, that should drop off quite suddenly. And that's never happened yet. Mm-hmm. And we'll know that we're on top of it when that happens. Mm-hmm. But the further we go dropping levels before that happens, the riskier it is in terms of a secondary outbreak.
Yes, yes, totally understand. Thank you mm-hmm. so very much for joining us this afternoon. Have a wonderful weekend. I just want to bring up this point. The policemen who assisted the whānau take their tūpapaku, their kuia, across the border was apparently was identified in the Pākehā media, but had also said that he used his power. He said, you know, things like, just let me do it or whatever. And, of course, it's in front of the courts or some judiciary, whatever police thing that they do. What did you make of that story? Do you think that it was a bit of a beat-up? Do you think that that the Pākehā media should have released the policeman's name? Do you think that we've done so well, Māori, in appearing to be good with the Pākehā media, that this one story and they just jumped on it because they haven't had anything to bash Māori over the head with? Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, and I don't know if it's intentional that they want to bash us up, but the pattern of it is that if you're Māori, you're less likely to get name suppression. Even if you do get name suppression, people are less likely to respect that. And, he's broken the police rules, so he's going to be held to account
for that.
But
has he, though?
Mm. Well, apparently that's what they believe.
Yes, yeah. That is what they believe. So, again, we've been trialled before we had our day in court.
Yes, I think the key thing with his case is we won't really be able to judge it until we see the outcome. And, there's going to be a number of contrasts here. So we had the two people that went to Queenstown. What's going to happen to them? What's going to happen to this policeman? Are the two that went to Queenstown, are they... Are they going to get 3 months in prison like the mum who took her children to see their deceased papa? And on balance, you can expect that they probably aren't. They might get home detention for the afternoon, and a fine. but that is the pattern of it. And, we've got, it's a bit like... the racism towards the Pacifica community early on in the Delta outbreak, and things. And of course, you look at the facts. I wrote a column last year talking about how in a pandemics, the pattern is their Pākehā started because they're more affluent and they travel all over the world. But once it gets back into your country, it's the people on the margins that pay the price. And I was looking the other day at the numbers. And of the cases that have come into New Zealand, 940 of them have been brought into New Zealand by the Pākehā community, and it's about 90 by the Māori and Pacific community. But we're the ones that get the racism, and we're the ones that get the blame. But ultimately, the only fault on our part is that we're the ones that pay the price.
Thank you. Well, do I say thank you for that? But thank you
for joining. I can give you some good news.
Okay. Let's end on an up note.
Yeah, so the up note is that over the last fortnight, Māori have the fastest rate of people taking up the vaccination. So as of today, since the 15th of September, our numbers have increased 14.4%. and that's nearly 50% more than in the Pākehā community. You know, so a lot of our people are out there working really, really hard, and we are starting to get some traction. Now, I've noticed around the country, a lot of the DHBs that were quite well behind, the numbers are picking up. And I was talking to someone yesterday and saying that about the DHBs, and they said, yes, but it's only because just now they're allowing us to do what we always said we should be allowed to do. And they're dead right. But it is positive. We're still behind, but, you know, we're not taking a back step. So hats off to all those people who are working really, really hard on the front line getting people vaccinated.